All right. Welcome to another episode of The Close Up. I'm your host, Stephen Cameron, a part of the Orlando Magic HQ Network. Today is a really fun episode. We got Jake Chapman, Orlando Magic radio play-by-play caller and host of the Pod Squad, co-host of the Pod Squad. He's all over the Orlando Magic audio network. Jake Chapman is awesome. He's been with the team for quite a while now, about a decade. And we have a great conversation about the current Magic, like the current state of the Magic with their lead to winning the game versus the Bucks at home on game 82 that secured them with the fifth seed for the NBA playoffs. We talked about some of the fun aspects of the regular season, things that surprised us, elements that made this season so successful. We even talk about specifically with this Cavs matchup, the 4-5 seed, where the Cavs might have ducked the Hornets a little bit. They might have purposely lost on the Hornets to play the Magic. What? The disrespect, thinking the Magic are just a rollover team and they could just choose us. We get into all that. We have a great time. Jake is awesome. Really passionate about this Magic team, knows a lot about them, and just overall a great human being. So looking forward to you all hearing that. Before we get into that, just want to remind you all of a couple things. Our HQ Instagram subscriber program is great. It's on Instagram, gets you into our group chat and a bunch of other awesome benefits. Go to our Instagram page, go to our pinned post. You'll see everything that's included. It's $5 a month, and it helps us do a lot of really cool stuff for you all. The second thing, bets. It's NBA playoff season, baby. Let's make some bets. I just made one. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season for MLB, golf, NBA playoffs, and NHL playoffs. All the latest stats, news, scores are available to you and following your favorite team. Just it's all there. It's all there. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head over to the website, betonline.ag with your mobile device, or you can get it on the app. The BetOnline app is awesome. That's what I've used in the past. It's pretty great. Just get into the action. It's a lot of fun. You can go ahead and just bet the Magic to win this series versus the Cavs. I just put money on that myself today. It's one I believe in. Don't take my word for it. Do your own research. Figure out if that's a good way to spend your money, and head over to BetOnline. BetOnline, where the game starts. The last thing I want to mention before we get in this conversation is just want to plug my good man, Brandon Kravitz, over at 96.9 The Game. He has got his own podcast called Zone Heads. If you're looking for more than just Orlando Magic content, Zone Heads podcast is where you want to be. It's not just Magic. They're covering the UCF. They're covering Orlando City Soccer, covering the Solar Bears, cover just about everything Central Sports related. I believe he even covers the Rays over in Tampa. So head over to the Zone Heads podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Check out Brandon Kravitz. He drops 4 easy digestible episodes a week. Anywhere from like 8 to 15 minutes or so. They're really awesome for all your Orlando all of your Orlando sports news. All right, that's really all I got. Let's just get in this conversation with Jake Chapman. All right, everyone, like I said in the intro, we got Jake Chapman, Orlando Magic radio play-by-play announcer, podcast producer in general, one of the hosts of the Pod Squad, a little bit of everything. Jake, welcome to the Close Up. I appreciate you taking the time to join the show. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Steven. I'm good. It was fun yesterday at Kia Center. One of the best atmospheres. It was absolutely electric that I've been a part of. So it's been a long, fun season. I think we're all kind of catching our second wind and excited to have a first-round playoff series rather than a first-round play-in game to prepare for. We got a couple days here to rest up, get in the practice gym, and then we'll see how it rolls this weekend in Cleveland.
Now, Jake, correct me if I'm wrong. Is this your first playoff experience with the Magic? I know you were around for a little while, and then you dipped off, but then you came back, if I'm remembering your history correctly. But did you get to cover the Magic with the Vooch era when they made the playoffs?
So when I was producer, I came the year after the finals run. So I was here as producer for that Eastern Conference finals that we lost to Boston. And then, I kind of presided over the end of that was sort of the beginning of the end, right, of the Dwight era. And then when I came back, I missed the Toronto series. The next year I was here, and that was the pandemic year. So for what it was worth, the Bucks series in the bubble, calling games remotely, I had a part in that, and it was not very memorable, things considered. I at the very least remember and have personal experience for those Dwight days. And it's the closest it's been, the building and I think the buzz around town right now since Dwight left, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think emotionally we all are connecting this series and like this team so much more energized. No disrespect to the last era, but it's just a whole lot different when you're making the playoffs with 21 and 22-year-olds versus guys in their like late 20s and early 30s. You know, totally. We can tell there's just so much more for this team to grow. That's exciting, though. Like, you know, okay, bubble era, game calling a little bit. But, like, now, like, dude, game calling, like, the most anticipated playoffs in about a decade. Like, that's exciting. How are you feeling going into all this?
I was thinking about that yesterday. Like, the timing, and there's not a lot of times in life where you can say, wow, everything's kind of, like, aligning and working out perfectly. But to be honest with you, last year, and I think you and I and Malik talked about this last time when I was on, like, I was just getting my feet under me as far as doing radio play-by-play. And so if we were, you know, the 5 seed last year and heading into a big playoff series with a whole bunch of eyes and ears on us, I think I would have been a lot more nervous than I am now. Now it's just pure excitement. I can't wait to call those games. And again, if I can get a couple more like yesterday was, then, I mean, this season, Steven, they made it easy on me. Like, you know, it's easy calling a game with Paolo and Franz, and especially the home games with Jalen and the way he energizes everybody. And, you know, meeting the moment is what we always talk about. And there have been a whole lot of moments to try to meet this year. So when the team is fun and when you like the guys and when they play the right way, it's a pleasure to get to do what I get to do. And I can't wait for this series to start.
Well, it'll be fun because I'll actually get to listen to you a little bit. The first couple of games happen to be landing most likely. I know we're all anticipating what the exact schedule will be, but you know, I'm West Coast, as most of you all know, so I have to listen to a good amount of the games before I can turn them on visually once I get home on my commute back. So, Jake, I'm looking forward to hearing you. It's going to be a lot of fun, and having you call the series, yeah, it's going to be great. Can't wait. So before we get into like the specifics of this playoffs and just kind of things like leading up to this, yesterday, we're recording this Monday, April 15th for the listeners. On Sunday when they played the Bucks, there was a couple of games before that, about three or four of them, where high pressure and from my perspective, and I think a lot of people's perspective, a lot of letdown, right? Which is how the team showed up, how they prepared. How are you feeling about the team going into yesterday's game after the Rockets lost, the Bucks lost, and the 76ers lost, knowing how important this game was, really, first the Bucks again, last game of the season, no more ground to make up except for this very moment. How are you feeling going into that about the team?
Yeah, I tried to maintain perspective, but it felt like it kind of ratcheted up as the week went, right? I really thought that Houston game was a lost opportunity. And sure, yeah, it was Fan Appreciation Day and whatever. Without Elper and Şengün, we should not have allowed them to get in the paint, score as many points as they did, to out-rebound us. And that's kind of our bread and butter. Like, when we're at our best, We're outscoring teams as far as paint points go. We have two of the best players in the league getting into the paint, creating from there. And our defense is, you know, third-rated defense. And so that's, you know, from the outside in, the strength of the team. The game the next night, back-to-back on the road in Milwaukee, that was going to be a bit tougher. And then Philadelphia's playing about as well as anybody, and it was a massive game on Friday night. And so every, you know, Friday was kind of the apex. It was like win and you're in, but I also wasn't shocked that we lost. We had been on the road all week, and Philadelphia is Philadelphia, and that's a very, very scary team. Obviously, they finished the regular season playing just about as well as anybody, but when we saw them before Embiid went down, you know, they beat us twice. In December and January, I was like that. I was like, if anybody's going to take Boston down, it's them, because I kind of like the guys they got back. The Harden deal, I felt like Batum fit them very, very well. And then when Maxey's getting out and you know, at that breakneck speed, they've kind of got everything covered, I thought. And I love Nick Nurse, and I think he's already sort of put his imprint on that franchise. So obviously after Friday, you're going, okay, like, where are we? What's this going to look like? I didn't know what Milwaukee was going to do. I thought there might be some juking around as far as trying, kind of like what Cleveland did, trying to manipulate and make sure that they got the matchup they wanted to. But what I had faith in was that we would come out and we would kind of get right. And I didn't know if we would win the game, but I thought we'd play much better than we did over the course of the week. We're just a better team at home. And right. I do think the sense of urgency didn't really hit us over the head until Friday. I think there was, you know, there was sort of like you knew that you needed one more and you kind of had a sense of what the magic number was. But to be honest with you, I think players don't focus on it as much as people like you and I do until, you know, their back's up against the wall. And then, you know, of course you come out and you have a rough start like you've had, and that was really the issue in all of those games. And it was the issue going back to the Charlotte game with Brandon Miller, and that was, you know, a week prior. And it's going to be an issue in the Cleveland series if we don't get it right. Can't be giving up 35, 37 points in the first quarter. We were down 11 again yesterday, but then, you know, I think having Jonathan Isaac in the starting lineup made you feel a little bit better. Yeah. And then that second quarter yesterday was something like I've never seen before. I mean, it was just smothering defense. So, look, the bottom line is we're the third youngest team in the league, and you don't know how you're going to perform in these situations until you get into these situations. And it's never an elevator straight to the top. Like, you're going to have to bump your head a few times. So the experience is certainly good for the young team. And the bottom line is you still had a reprieve. Thank God the Cavaliers won on Friday night, right? Like, it's kind of funny when we're thinking about it. Here we are because the Cavs were able to beat Indiana on Friday night. And now we can thank them by hopefully knocking them out of the playoffs.
You know, you mentioned a few things in that era where I just want to, like, slow down and break a few things down. It's just funny, you know, third youngest team of the NBA. You know, this season certainly matters. We certainly want to make our imprint, you know, as a team in the playoffs. You know, let the league be on notice that, you know, whatever the outcome is, like, first round, second round, however far they get, that, you know, they're here and they're a force, and this isn't a fluke year, right? But this team hasn't gone through, you know, only a couple players have gone through what it's like to really go for the last, you know, 10, 12, 15 games and push for playoff standings. And, you know, that's Joe Ingles for most of his career. And then Gary Harris had a couple of seasons with the Nuggets where he got to do that. But outside of that, very, very little experience of playoff teams and even just trying to finish a season properly. And the amount of experience that this roster learned on how to prepare for that next time they're in this situation, you know, next year, I'm assuming next season. And also just the data that the front office got from all of this on how to potentially make some changes and just preparedness, whatever it is, roster, just mindset, whatever the case may be, however they want to address this team this offseason. They got so much data while still this team pulling it off yesterday versus the Bucks and securing that playoff expectation, that playoff fifth seed spot, which I think is more than a lot of us ever thought when it was training camp, you know, last summer, right? Like, I remember going into training camp thinking, let's get them to make a play-in roster, and then, you know, play-in roster, play-in spot. And then it was, they did really well expectations have changed, and they held to the new expectations is kind of how I'm viewing all of this, which is pretty phenomenal. Jake, when you look at all of that, like, kind of where did you have them? What were you hoping for them to land in the beginning of the season to where they ended now? Like, they obviously exceeded my expectations, as I just mentioned. I thought they'd make the play-in, and we'd just be happy with how they competed within that play-in, whether they got to the playoffs or not. They blew my estimate of, you know, 42 wins out of the water. I'm like, this. They crushed everything I said about them, and I love every aspect of it. How about you? What were your feelings going into the season to where they are today?
Yeah, it was very similar, and I think that, like, the players even said that, like, the playoffs are the goal, and when the playoffs are the goal, I think that means the play-in is the expectation, right? We're a game away from the play-in tournament, right? So it's not like we knocked it out of the park, but I think as you said, 42 would have probably been a reasonable estimate to put right in the play-in range. You had those two teams in the 9 and 10, but then everybody else in the Eastern Conference, and it's kind of fluky. I've never seen an Eastern Conference where, you know, 2 through 8 were as jumbled up as we were heading into the final weekend and then day of the season. It was pretty crazy. I think the bottom line is 2 years ago, you won 22 games. The next year, you won 34. And the next year, you won 47. So a plus 12 and a plus 13. That is about as close to an elevator to the top as you're going to get, right? Like, you just don't see that typically with young teams, with a first-time head coach who I think has been absolutely phenomenal. I think his extension was well-deserved. And I think you can't really – I think you can't do it this way without the same voice being consistent the whole time and without a personality like Jamal Mosley has, which has changed. First 2 years, he was, I used to call him relentlessly optimistic, like, and he had to be. It had to be, if you keep doing this, it's going to get better. And they had to trim away a lot of bad habits and sometimes players who had those bad habits in order to build this culture. But, like, you know, the guys who have been here, and whether those are veterans, guys like J.I. who wasn't on the floor then, Markel, who's been in and out, Gary, you know, Joe Ingles is here largely because of Coach Mosley. But then the guys, you know, who have been here the whole time, you think about guys like Mo Wagner and Cole Anthony, who have developed Jalen, Franz, obviously, and now, you know, Paolo is sort of unto himself. But all these guys had to trust that Coach Mosley was going to be the best for their careers individually and the best thing for the team. And they did. And that's, I think that's special, you know, not just about what they were believing in the X's and O's, but like that they believe in Coach Mosley as a man and as a person. And they, to a man, will tell you the reason that they trusted him and all that is because they think he cares about them. And it's kind of mushy, but he was able to build those interpersonal communication or interpersonal relationships through communication and trust all the way back when you were winning 22 games. And now you're starting to see that payoff. It's hard to get a really young team to defend, and that's what he's been able to do. And so I think, like, when you think about what the expectations were just from a win-loss perspective, I think obviously they surpassed that. But when you think about the fact that the team started 16-7 this year after 5-20 last year, you had a sense they could be a good defensive team in the back half of last year, but they did it all season long. That's the backbone of this team now. It's pretty clear. I'm biased. I think Daigneault obviously has a great argument for Coach of the Year. Chris Finch has a great argument as well. But Coach Mosley, I think, did something. To me, those awards are generally about expectations, and I think Coach Mosley surpassed in the Magic surpassed expectations more so than just about anybody else this year.
If Coach Mosley isn't top two in that voting, if not, doesn't, I mean, I can sort of understand if he doesn't win it, but if he's at least not top two in the voting for that award, what are we doing here, NBA? What are we doing? What more needs to happen? Who do I need to call?
The Western Conference is those two guys in the West did a phenomenal job. Sure. And they're going, I think they both have legit arguments because they finished in the top three of a really tough conference. But they also had, I mean, Minnesota is, they're loaded, man.
Like, yeah.
They've dealt with injuries, but you've got one of the best defenders in the last decade. You've got one of the best young stars in the league. And then a perennial all-star who, yeah, he can't stay healthy. But that roster, I mean, I that's why I think Daigneault probably deserves it, just because, I mean, to be the top seed in that Western Conference with, I'm pretty sure, the fourth youngest roster in the league is pretty impressive. So, you know, props to Mark Daigneault. They'll probably get the win, but our guy did pretty damn good as well.
I will still send angry X posts in rage that Mosley doesn't win. Just be ready,
expect,
Jake. Be ready.
I would expect nothing less from you, Steven.
It's what I do. Man, okay, so what is another thing that surprised you this season about this team that you didn't particularly expect? It could be an individual player, it could be whatever. Outside of maybe, you know, how many half court shots Steph made, like there's got to be something else that really sticks out to you about this team that just totally caught you off guard when you look back at the 82 games.
Gut reaction, first one off rip is Jaylen becoming one of the best 3-point shooters in the league.
Yes, like
that,
okay.
I mean, that was a jump. And look, I think that, you know, I spent some time diving into those numbers. He kind of stripped away some of the other parts of his game, right? Like, and I think by design, I think the coach has helped him with this. You know, they took away some of his playmaking responsibilities, which allows him to lock in on the other end more, and that's where he's absolutely special. But B, you know, they could do that because we've got two big wings that we're going to put the ball in their hands. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, Jaylen, if you're the third option, we don't need you running pick and roll and running into trees and turning the ball over. And look, and some of those things he's improved at too. He still has the capability to do those things. But years one and two were kind of like about seeing where you were at. And at that point, we didn't have Franz and Paolo at the point that they're playing at right now. And so Jaylen turned into more of a spot up shooter, and the six dribble possessions were way down, and the time, you know, the having the ball for 6 seconds and more way down. The catch and shoot threes were way up, and typically Jaylen is going to be above the break and he's going to be spacing the floor for Franz and Powell. And so now he could clear his head. And I think there was, you know, he talked a lot about kind of his mental during the summer and how he wasn't happy with how his first 2 years had gone and how to get back to loving the game. And I think that was really important as well. But I also think as far as just like the practical application on the floor, having the ball in Powell and Franz's hands and having Jaylen and Gary and Wendell and J.I. now spacing the floor around and whoever's out there, that's kind of the recipe for our offense when it's clicking. And then the other part is without what Jaylen does on the other end, the steals, obviously the points off turnovers are so important to us because we're not a great perimeter shooting team, period. That, you know, he helps the offense in a whole lot of other ways other than just spotting up. When we're at home, there's like nothing like Jaylen jumping a passing lane and getting that wide open run. It just gets the place jacked up and he plays with the crowd. It's just been so fun to watch everything kind of click into place for him this year. And now, and let me just preface, or, you know, finish with this, like now he can build that stuff back into his game. Like Jaylen's, you know, he's not going to be a spot up shooter the rest of his career. But I think he was kind of force fed a lot of responsibility early. Now the usage comes down a bit. He's more of a spot up shooter. And now as he, you know, keeps defenses honest and they're closing out hard on him, now he can build back and it's a lot easier. He's not running into set packed into the paint defenses if they have to respect his jumper. So I think that was the first thing that needed to lock into place. And now he can sort of build back more offensive responsibility.
Yeah, Jaylen's growth this year has been quite phenomenal. I knew he was a better shooter than what we've seen in years past. Didn't expect him to hit 40%. I think that's roughly where he ended the season on around five attempts per game. You know, which was crazy because it's like that kind of just sustained. It hit and he just kept hitting them. And it wasn't like he had one really, really high month and one really low month and this is just an average. He just kind of sustained like between 38 and, you know, 41% the entire season. It's just like incredible.
And Steven, I had it the other day and I would imagine it was the same because I don't think he did anything yesterday that would have torpedoed it. The month of April was his best shooting month of his career from the field. He shot like 54% from the field in the month of April. The second best month of his career was March. And so, I mean, he's getting even better as the season's gone. And that's just field goal percentage. The three has been consistent. But now, exactly like I was saying, those step in for the long twos or eventually I think he's going to add some more in-between game. It's everything has clicked and it's only gotten better as the season's gone.
Well, we know the Magic offense has been their weakness the entire season, right? I think they, for the longest time, they were still around 26 in offense, and they've slowly, the second half of the season, have worked their way up to, they're finishing the season, according to basketballreference.com, at the 22nd best defense or offense in the league. And it's like, okay, still, that's got to be addressed. There needs to be improvements there in the next couple of seasons. But like, the ability for them to climb up, and also seeing Jalen Suggs' trend that you just called out, those two go hand in hand, right?
For sure.
You know, making smarter shots, knowing when to pass, knowing you know, when to drive, knowing when to just say, this is my turn and I'm going to take this three-pointer. I think like all of that has just contributed to like Jalen's consistency on that end that you've been talking about, and just the impact it's made on this team on getting, you know, the offense to continue just slow, needs to improve, but slowly continuing to go in that upward trajectory. I remember like getting excited a month or two ago, hey, they're at 24 in offensive rating, and then 23, now 22. That's right direction, right direction. I love that.
There was a stretch, I think, from February to like mid-March where we were like a top 5 3-point shooting team in the league.
Yeah.
And it was Jalen, obviously. Paolo and Franz were both struggling at that point, if I recall. Franz struggled all season long. They basically both did. From 3-point range, but it also coincided with getting healthy. When we had Gary and Wendell as the stalwarts in the starting lineup, both those guys, I mean, Gary started out the season ice cold, but once he started playing more consistently, he got back to closer to what he is, which is a 38-40% 3-point shooter. And Wendell, percentage wise, shot the ball very well from long range basically all season. So and then, you know, you had other guys who you knew you could count on, like a Joe Ingles and guys coming off the bench knocking down threes. So it was it's still, I think, one of our biggest issues offensively, 3-point shooting as a whole. It's very much, you know, ebbs and flows over the course of the season. And I think it's going to be one of the big keys against Cleveland. We got to make some threes, and we got to do it. You know, it can't be jacking 37 threes outside in. We gotta start with dribble penetration and get those kickouts. But we can dive into that another time.
No, absolutely. We'll talk about that here shortly. Before we head actually to the playoffs, you know, that matchup, I do want to ask you, you know, we just talked about the highs, we talked about the funds, the expectations, and the unexpected things that we've learned about this team. But I got to ask, what is something that might have disappointed you or bummed you out a little bit about this season?
Well, I think to be a team that gets to the free throw line as much as we do, and then be a team that shoots free throws as poorly as we do, I think young teams a lot of times aren't great at free throws, and it's not something that I think we can fix right away. But typically, I think, you know, young players get better as they go, and it's not like we have a Giannis, for instance. Like Paolo, right. Paolo slowly improved. I think he finished around 72%. If he can get up around 80%, he's going to score 28 points a game. Like, it's going to make a huge difference, because he shoots 7 free throws a night. So the free throw percentage, the slow starts late in the season is really concerning, and the turnovers. And I think the turnovers, I think sometimes we have a tendency to overpass, and it's because we're trying to get good, clean looks from three because we're not a good 3-point shooting team. So at times we pass up fairly good looks looking for an even better one because we want it to be completely wide open. In this Cleveland series, we're going to have to step in and shoot threes in rhythm within the offense. And again, that needs to be inside out. But the disappointment, I would say, on the offensive end are the free throws and turnovers. And those are things that didn't necessarily get better as the season went on.
Yeah, no, I agree with that as well. The free throws were frustrating all year. I love the fact that they got to the line so often, but there was just so many games where you'd see them, like, you know, hitting 50, 60% of them and not, you know, not, yeah, just being on the bottom 10% of the, or, you know, 10 teams in the league and free throws made was a little bit frustrating with how frequently they got there. I think for me, it was just seeing how much Franz struggled with the three this year. You know, it's just like he had a couple of months there, like right after he got back from injury, where it looked like things were starting to go. And it's like, man, I want to see him get back there. You know, he did so many things well this year. Like, you know, he grew as a driver, he grew as a playmaker, he grew defensively. We see how much he impacts his team in a positive way defensively when he is on the floor versus when he's out with injury or something like that, you know, with his rolled ankle that he had for a couple of days there. But man, if he could get that 3-point shot to knock down like he was hitting it, you know, even just a couple seasons ago where it was closer to, you know, I think like 35-36% somewhere around there, that would, I think, really help unlock him. And I think there was even a couple months where you could tell it was like kind of getting into his head a little bit. Maybe there were some confidence things there. It seems to be fixed at this point, or like not fixed. Sorry. He seems to be in a better headspace. You know, at least it's what we saw yesterday. But I'm hoping, you know, this summer that something there can help him get kind of back in that right direction, getting that long range ball, because man, him having that three ball, being a little bit more consistent with him, would make him an incredible three-way scorer. Just it, three-level scorer, sorry. That would be so fun.
Yeah, I think with Franz, I don't know. I mean, it's, I hate to say he was tired at the beginning of the season. I think it was.
Sure, he was.
But I think there's got to be something there. I mean, yeah. He played such high-level basketball through an ankle sprain with the German national team over the summer, and obviously delivered. And his jumper just looked flat for like the first 3 months of the season, right? A lot of line drives. And then I think he tried to adjust. And you're right, because when he came back off the ankle injury, you know, yeah, he was working his way back and making sure he trusted his ankle, but he also got some rest. And it looked a little bit better for a few weeks. I think some R&R will do him very well. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't expect him to shoot as poorly from long range next year or moving forward. He's just too good. We've already seen it before, like you said. And he's the type of guy that I think will get in the lab this summer and make sure he's got some answers if he faces the same issue next year.
I mean, he's a hard worker. We know it probably bothered him. He's going to continue to work. You know, that was just, I think, something that kind of like, you know, you took my answer with the free throw, so I had to think quickly on my feet. I was like, yeah, the three-pointers from Franz kind of hurt me a little bit too, so I get it.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Jake, let's get into some fun before we wrap up this podcast for a few more minutes. The Magic are going to be playing the Cavs, the 4-5 matchup. Cleveland ducked. They ducked that last game. They lost on purpose. We all have heard about it all day. Some people even watched it. How do you feel about Cleveland choosing the Magic once they kind of, I mean, I'm assuming they all got told the Magic are up. They're going to win. Let's verse them. How does that make you feel? Just in general with this situation.
Yeah, I don't want to assume that that's exactly what happened, because we don't know necessarily. Sure. I didn't watch the Cavs game, and so I don't want to accuse them of anything. If I'm Coach Mosley, I'm probably telling everybody in the locker room that that's exactly what happened, right? Like, for motivation, it's a bulletin board material. To me, if you mess with the basketball gods, they will punish you. And so we will see if that's the case. I think the Cavs match up well against us, but I think the Cavs have so much more pressure than we do, which is an interesting aspect of it. I think about how, okay, Dean Wade's got an injury issue, but he is a very good defender. And then they've got guys like Mobley and Okoro that they can throw against Paul and Franz. And I think they can kind of hide the weak parts of their defense, the guards, on our guys, right? Like Jalen and Gary are more floor spacers. And so, you know, and I don't think Mitchell or Garland are going to be too out over their skis trying to check them. I think it's going to come down to physicality and rebounding largely, and how we, if we can, control Donovan Mitchell. And if Jonathan Isaac's healthy, then that makes a massive difference. And as of right now, he is. So it's going to be a really tough series. I do think that if you really think about it, like whether or not they avoided somebody or saw us and wanted that matchup, I think there is a level of desperation going on in Cleveland right now from the head coach, from the organization, trying to prove to number 45 that he wants to be there long term, from Darius Garland trying to prove that he's worth the extension that he just signed, who's had an awful season. Everybody, you know, there's a lot of questions about whether that backcourt works. And frankly, I think Darius Garland has not been as good as Darius Garland can be since Donovan Mitchell's been there. So proof's in the pudding as far as I'm concerned. But I also think they got smacked around by the New York Knicks in the first round last year. And so the physicality aspect is something that I know they respect how physical we it, what our size brings and how physical our style of play is. And they know that they need to answer that bell. So regardless of whether or not they kind of aimed for us, I know for a fact that they respect us and they have to. It was a 2-2 season series split. And we've got more size and defensive prowess than just about anybody else in the conference. It's just it's an experience. So I'm not sure exactly if they didn't match up well with, you know, whoever else might have ended up in that spot, if it was Indiana or whoever, but we'll see. If you need to use it for motivation, then that's fine. But I think probably no matter what, we're the new kid on the block. And so I'm sure 5 or 6 other teams would have preferred to play us as opposed to a Philadelphia or a Miami. And I can't really say I blame them.
Yeah, I mean, I can't blame any team or anyone who's going to put, you know, odds on the Magic versus any series that they would put the Magic as the underdogs, because they are so young. They are very, very inexperienced. And I don't think that's necessarily a knock. Like, I don't really take that disrespectful. It just kind of is what it is. You know, 21, 22, 23-year-olds are pretty inexperienced, and we know they haven't played in the playoffs before. So I'm looking forward to them just proving themselves, showing up in the moment, you know, whether they're winning or losing, it being competitive and close in every game, and just seeing how it happens. I think one thing that's really going to make a huge difference is, you know, we've seen Jonathan Isaac's minutes slowly get more and more and more. And the last couple of games, he's been playing much heavier minutes. I think he ended the last game yesterday around 26 minutes, I believe, is what he finished at. And it's funny, though. He would have played more if it wasn't a blowout. He would have closed out the game and probably gotten closer to 30 to 32 minutes, because I remember putting a post on X that there was 8 minutes and 30 seconds left or something like that. It was around the eight minute and change mark where there was a timeout and he was not on the court. And I looked and I was like, oh, shoot. He's got 21 minutes already played, and there's still 8 minutes left in the third and all of the fourth to play. Well, turns out a lot of the starters got some rest, and that's really nice. But Jonathan Isaac playing 25 to 30 plus minutes per game, that is a difference maker when you have Evan Mobley and Jared Allen that needs to be planned for with this team. And then you have the versatility of Wendell Carter, who can play the 4, the 5, on the bench as a starter next to Jonathan Isaac. We've even seen that happen earlier in the midseason, you know, specifically a game that comes to mind versus the Timberwolves. I just love the versatility between Jonathan Isaac and Wendell Carter and how they're going to really be able to affect this game and this team physically versus the Cavs. It's going to be quite an experience and fun to watch, if you don't ask me. I mean, I don't know. I love the idea of it. It's going to be a lot of fun. This team is physical. Jake, I know we got to wrap up our time here shortly. What's your prediction for this series?
I don't know, man. I get the sense that it's going to be difficult for us to win one of the first two games. I think probably game one feels like, okay, like we need to get our legs under us, figure out what it's like. I think we'll probably play better in game two. And then I think we'll come back and we'll protect home court. So it would have been nice to have the 4 seed. I think probably we're talking a 6 or 7 game series. And I just hope that by the time we go back up there, that we know what to expect and we're able to go up there and steal a game. And so I think that's what it's going to come down to. What would that be? Game 5, which generally is, there's the old stat, like 70% of game 5 winners end up winning the series, which makes sense, obviously. But like, I think at that point, if we can just extend the series, then the longer it goes, obviously, the better a shot we have. But I do not think any team's going to win the series in 5 games. I mean, I think it's going to be a long sort of slugfest. I think defense is going to rule the day. And I think it's going to come down to probably turnovers here, free throws here, a clutch jumper here. And those can be difficult things to kind of get over the hump. They've got a guy in Donovan Mitchell who I think will probably be the best player in the series. And typically that is where you pick the Cavaliers. But our defense and our rebounding and our size, I think, can really mitigate some of their strengths. So and our bench. And we haven't talked much about the bench. But Cole played really well against them in the regular season. Yep. Mo had that game out out of the All-Star break where he was just, you know, flying around and hitting people and bringing the juice, as I always say on the radio broadcast. And as you mentioned, Joe Ingles, one of the only guys who's been here, been there. And I think his voice is going to be really important in those moments, you know, in a loud arena when you need to sort of refocus. So I think it's going to come down to role players and kind of those little things, those small margin of error type things. And hopefully we're able to execute. And hopefully we've learned some lessons from the last couple of weeks, because we've been playing playoff games, Steven, for about 2 weeks now.
Yeah, it's, I mean, they've been in the hunt. They've been in it. You're right. They've been playing playoff pressure games for a while, and yeah, it's going to be fun. I need them to go six games. This is the reason why is I have a work conflict next week, but I am coming to Orlando for a wedding. I'm coming back home for a wedding, and it happens to be that I think the sixth game will land when I can go, because I will be okay in town, unless it's the day of the wedding, which I don't think it will be. I think it'll be a couple days prior. So if it's game six, we get to game six and we close out at home, I'm there. I can be there. I've already talked to some friends about some tickets. You know, we're going to get it sorted out. You know, I might even be able to attend a game five watch party, depending on how it all goes down.
Love it.
I need them to make this a six game series though, so I can attend my first Magic playoff game in over a decade. So wow, looking forward to it. It'll be a lot of fun. Magic in six. Because I want to be there for the closeout win. That's what I'm calling it.
I got to be honest. I'll take Magic in four or five.
I will too.
but that six sounds. But I don't expect Magic in four or five, to be honest with you. Six sounds perfect, and then yeah, you can swing by the radio location, and we'll hang out in person.
Sounds great. I love it. Jake, thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your day to join me, to join you know, the close up on Orlando Magic HQ Network. Looking forward to hearing your coverage of the playoffs. Not the play-in, the playoffs.
Yeah, buddy.
And yeah, just if go ahead and let everyone know where they can find you on socials, and obviously on Orlando Magic Radio. If you guys aren't listening, please, for the love of God, tune in.
Yeah, you can stream the broadcast, NBA League Audio Pass, if you're out of the Orlando area like Steven is, the Magic app or iHeart app in within 75 miles, I think it is, of the city of Orlando. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Chapman OM. And yeah, lock in. Here we go.
Fans, thank you for tuning in. Jake, thank you for joining us. Let's go Magic. Playoffs, baby. Peace.